All right, well, welcome to the last concurrent session of Arts Conference, Kansas City. This is Artists and Repertoire International. My name is Barry Stapleton. I'm the director of the Ward Irish Music Archives. Two very interesting topics this afternoon. Our first is from Joshua Brown. Joshua Brown is a PhD candidate in ethnomusicology at the University of California, Riverside. He conducted his dissertation research in Seville, Spain during the 2011-2012 academic year, supported by Fulbright IIE and UC Riverside Humanities Research Grant Fellowships. This work addresses how, I'm going to butcher some of this stuff, but Andalusian histories, landscapes, and performance spaces relates to musical and social practices within flamenco communities. The Morón style of flamenco serves as a central case study through which Josh evaluates stylistic and performative elements within the context of tradition. For his MA thesis, he explored how popular music, American folk ideology, and leftist politics converged and intensified at a key folk institution in Los Angeles known as the Ash Grove. Josh is a four-time Gluck Program of the Arts Fellow and a recent recipient of the University of California Dissertation Year Fellowship. Please welcome Joshua Brown.
Thanks. So I first just want to thank ARSC for having me and for all of you for coming to the talk. And I'm glad that I'm presenting in the Seville room because it's quite appropriate. And this is the sister city of Seville, where I lived and did my research. So it's quite interesting. Anyhow, I want to begin by explaining a certain term. I want to explain the term schizophrenia, which was coined by R. Murray Schafer in 1969. And schizophrenia refers to the splitting of a sound from its original source and context through electroacoustic reproduction. This concept constitutes a fundamental part of the argument that I put forth in this paper. So, flamenco communities in southern Spain are rife with antagonistic ideologies concerning race, tradition, modernity, and performance practice. Puro, or pure, is a common appropriative term used to describe artists as well as musical forms and phrases that conform to traditional ideas about performance and expression. Pure flamenco, or flamenco puro, is most often defined by race and place, as well as intimacy and sincerity. Andalusian gypsies have been cast as the idealized performers of flamenco, while the oft-elusive fiesta functions as the fetishized scenario where, quote, real flamenco emerges. In what follows, I examine a unique flamenco tradition from the Andalusian pueblo of Morón de la Frontera that flourished in the mid-20th century and remains vibrant today. The architect of this tradition, known as the Morón style, was Diego del Gastor, a humble gypsy guitarist known as much for his distinct sound as for his unwillingness to perform or record for people outside of his social circles. Unlike many of his contemporaries, Diego refused to enter into potentially exploitative relationships with members of the upper classes, known colloquially as señoritos. While this stance deprived Diego and his kin of much-needed income, it also set an ideological precedent that remains one of the benchmarks of Morón flamenco. In the early 1960s, U.S. Americans began to travel to Morón to study flamenco with Diego del Gastor. This owed, in large part, to the diffusion of English language flamenco texts written by U.S. American expatriate Don Porin. I examine how an exhaustive set of amateur audio recordings made by several of Diego's closest American students and friends has functioned variously as study material, community currency, and according to famed flamenco producer and archivist Ricardo Pachón, a quote, paradigm of flamenco perfection, end quote. In the essay Pygmy Pop, Steve Feld argues, quote, acts of schizophrenic exchange simultaneously create powerful bonds and produce equally powerful divisions, end quote. My aim here is to demonstrate how the Morón fiesta tapes, as they have been labeled due to the overwhelming number of recordings from fiestas, not only generate new relationships and conflicts, but also reveal tensions and dynamics already existing within the social sphere. The myriad effects spawned by these recordings have led me to the following questions. What can the recording's various circulative routes tell us about the musical community in question? How do they invert power relations between community members? And how have they both deepened and altered the mystique of Diego and his music? Drawing from ethnographic fieldwork conducted among members of this international flamenco community, I will explore how these recordings invigorate, inform, and instruct aficionados and disciples of the Morón style today. And first, I'll begin by playing an audio example set from October of 1972. It was after the famous documentary series in flamenco known as Rito y Geografía, which is the rite and geography of flamenco, was recorded. And this was a sort of post-production party that was recorded by Christopher Carnes. And it features Andorano singing, and it's in Bulerías, which is a flamenco palo or song form. So. The style is very idiosyncratic, it's very different. It's white when you hear it, you know who's playing it. What style it is. Lots of repetition, lots of legato, that's part of the style. It's also very playful. The way he plays is very playful, more so than most flamenco. Flamenco is an umbrella term that refers to numerous song and dance forms that coalesced in the mid-19th century and remained a product of the Andalusian underclasses until roughly the 1970s. You'll notice Andalusia is the southernmost province or autonomous community, as it's really called in Spain. And this is where flamenco comes from. Although audiences have included members of the upper classes since the late 19th century, flamenco was most closely associated with marginalized spaces and groups, brothels, gypsies, prostitutes, alcoholics. During the reign of dictator Francisco Franco, signs in bars often proclaimed, "Se prohíbe el cante," or "flamenco singing is prohibited here," as a measure to keep out undesirables. While flamenco artists appeared in concert halls outside Spain by 1951, it was not until Paco de Lucía's performance at Madrid's Royal Theater in 1975 that flamenco was allowed to enter concert spaces within the country. And this is six months prior to Franco's passing in 1975, in November of 1975. With this, Lucía's performance was a solo guitar recital tailored to fit the stage. Thus, flamenco has developed duly as a hermetic art form and a fairly lucrative public spectacle. Tensions between public and private, spontaneous and choreographed, commercial and non-commercial, as well as gypsy and non-gypsy formations, invigorate debates regarding authenticity, quality, and tradition in flamenco communities. Flamenco itself is a highly mobile, expressive form in which the body is the only requisite instrument. In addition to singing, performers maintain and improvise upon various interlocking rhythms by rapping knuckles, snapping fingers, stomping feet, clapping hands, and slapping thighs, heels, and chests. While instruments including the guitar and the cajon or box drum have become integral to the repertory, they are by no means indispensable. The adaptability of flamenco performance underscores the inherent decision-making, whether conscious or unconscious, that goes into determining which physically, socially, and affectively constructed environments are appropriate, if not ideal, for making music. Since expression within flamenco is largely based upon collective experience and reciprocal execution, the performance space constitutes a defining element of both social and sonic aesthetics. This music continues to be defined by a sense of familiarity with faces, verses, and rhythms. For instance, many performers adopt the name of their city or neighborhood as their artistic surname. Others inherit names from members of their family, as in the case of Niño Ricardo, Manuel Serapi, who's actually Niño de Ricardo, so the child of Ricardo, but it became shortened into Niño Ricardo as all sorts of words seem to be truncated in Andalusian, the Andalusian dialect, or monikers referencing their favorite foods. In this way, flamenco is an intimate art that relies upon performative reciprocity, or what Lydia Rueda Gutierrez, one of my informants, refers to as a camaraderie of complicity. For these reasons, flamenco is often performed in private parties and semi-public spaces. In the past 30 years, however, flamenco has become extremely popular and increasingly profitable. As a result, local and regional governments in Andalusia have, up until recently, devoted increasing amounts of money and publicity to marketing this music at home and abroad. Indeed, many flamenco artists have moved conspicuously out of private spaces and into the public eye. Adherents to the Morón style are notorious for rigorous ideological and performative commitment to informal flamenco gatherings known as fiestas or juergas. Diego's nephew Juan del Gastor asserts, "In flamenco there has to be spontaneity because that is where the purity lives, that is where the purity comes from. In flamenco, you have to take a risk." And when I put an exclamation point, I should probably put like 5 exclamation points because he tends to speak very loudly. Juan believes that the risks of improvisation, typical of fiestas and informal gatherings, are absolutely essential to flamenco performance. He explains, "If you're going to dance as a performer and you always do the same thing, the same thing, the same thing, when you go to work and dance, it's cold because there's no feeling. You're not risking anything. You don't risk anything because you have everything planned out." End quote. Improvisation, inspiration, and sincerity are intimately linked in flamenco expression. The desire to sing, play, or dance, then, is considered to be of utmost importance. Manuel Flores, a well-known singer and dancer from Morón, elaborates, quote, "Flamenco is as unique and as spontaneous as people want it to be. If people don't have the urge to sing, then there is no flamenco. If people do have the urge to sing, there is flamenco. The best of flamenco is really when you feel that which you are hearing. This is the reality of flamenco." End quote. Flores associates quality flamenco with group unity and individual desire. Natural impulses to sing and participate in collective music making are expected to be stronger and purer, or más puro, in situations where social bonds are deeper. Although flamenco has become a staple in large theaters in Spain and abroad, reciprocity and solidarity remain fundamental cultural values within Andalusian flamenco communities. Whether flamenco is staged at a bar before 40 people or a theater before 400, the final piece performed typically consists of a bulerías por fiesta in which performers abandon the microphones, stand up, and move to the front of the stage, as you can see here. So they left their seats, they move up, they ditch the microphones, and now he's performing in a huge theater where everybody is forced to listen even more closely because he's not using the microphone. And so it kind of brings everybody closer in that sort of sense. Such finales act as a symbolic return to informal and what are often considered utopic flamenco gatherings. They also point to the centrality of the fiesta as a point of uninhibited convergence and creativity. Now here's a fiesta at Flamenco Peña Pies Plomo in Sevilla, and you'll notice this is on stage, this is staged, and it's at the end of the performance, and they ask for all sorts of people, including students, whoever wants to come up and knows how to keep time, to come do it. ¡Cortemos! you get the point. Sometimes fiestas are staged for recording sessions in order to offer the listener access to what are or seem to be otherwise private affairs. Such recordings inevitably blur the already hazy distinctions between public and private performance practices. The proliferation of recordings has also made it possible for artists to learn from one another via isolated listening sessions, thereby reducing live interactions to an unnecessary enterprise. Established artists no longer have to spend time at fiestas or concerts in order to be familiar with the work of their peers. Consequently, many concert promoters now include the Bulerías por Fiesta finale clause on performers' contracts to prevent them from leaving the performance prematurely. Solitary listening not only contradicts communal and participatory aspects of the flamenco fiesta, but recordings and the reproducibility of performances in studios have irrevocably transformed previous flamenco praxis. The prominent position of the fiesta in flamenco culture, narratives, and the social imagination is precisely what lends an aura of authenticity and mythology to the so-called fiesta tapes, comprised of hundreds of recorded hours of excellent flamenco singers and guitar players who resided mostly in pueblos surrounding the Andalusian capital of Seville, including Lebrija, Utrera, and of course, Morón. And there are actually 400 hours in the best-known collection with about 200 or so tapes with 60 to 90 minutes on each one. So this is known as the sort of flamenco triangle. Lower Andalusia around the banks of the Guadalquivir River, including Cádiz, Jerez de la Frontera, Morón, Utrera, and of course Sevilla, and everything in there too, Lebrija. And so of course there are many people in eastern Andalusia, including Granada, that will disagree with this, but many people, especially, they can't deny that the most famous singers have come all from this region, especially Jerez and Cádiz, Sevilla. Okay. Many artists featured in these tapes, including Juan Talega, El Perrate, and Diego Legastor, were scarcely recorded prior to their encounters with their U.S.-American visitors. U.S.-American presence in Morón, formally established with the construction of an Air Force base in 1954, allowed for comprehensive visual and oral records of native life and music to be captured on film rolls and tape reels throughout the 1960s and 70s. Many of these photographs were published in a book 2 years ago by Steve Kahn entitled Flamenco Project, Una Ventana a la Visión Extranjera, or A Window into the Foreign Perspective. And it's also it's an exhibition that's been in museums in New York and in Spain. Kahn is an American flamenco guitarist that lived in Morón in the late 1960s and is one of the major documenters of the time period. In Andalusia, poverty rates were acute, industry practically non-existent, and economic activity based chiefly on agriculture and sharecropping. The local population rarely had access to sufficient food, let alone cameras or recording machines. Christopher and Maria Carnes, Steve Kahn and Evan Harar were among the main U.S.-American flamenco devotees in Morón who recorded extensively at lessons and fiestas. The Carnes collection in particular constitutes the most prolific set of recordings from Morón, including over 400 hours of audio material. Chris Carnes was one of Diego's best American students and friends, and his wife Maria received many lessons in cante or singing from Juan Talega. Ricardo Pachón recalled, Christopher and Maria Carnes had an Ur, a German reel-to-reel tape recorder, and they recorded in fiestas. At that time, nobody in Morón knew what a tape recorder was. The gypsies called Maria, Maria el Zurrón, or Maria with the big bag, because she always carried a big bag with her for the recording equipment. Although there was little contact between U.S. Americans in the flamenco community and U.S. Americans serving at the local Air Force base, the military outpost itself eventually provided local residents with access to blank reel-to-reel tapes and recording equipment. During my field work, I discovered that several natives of Morón have small collections of tapes with Diego del Gastor from the late 1960s and early 1970s as well. The fiesta tapes are remarkably valuable to Morón-style enthusiasts for several reasons. First, the artists on them were exceptionally skilled and generally averse to recording. According to Mika Grania, another Marone transplant from the United States, one record company sent a beautiful young woman to Marone to visit Diego Del Gastor and lure him back to New York City. She inevitably returned unaccompanied back to the United States. Second, the 60s and early 70s are regarded as a golden age during which distinctive artistic voices regularly gathered to make music solely for the love of the art. These artists performed song forms regarded as the purest and most profound, including Soleá and Seguirillas, while generally avoiding played those deemed less serious. Moreover, this era ended just before the commercialization of flamenco, the emergence of Nuevo Flamenco, and the advent of hard drugs, including cocaine and heroin, to the flamenco scene. Consequently, the music of these recordings stands as a paragon of traditionalism and flamenco purity. Finally, the extraordinary U.S.-American involvement in this flamenco scene inadvertently brought widespread awareness of the Marone style to new generations of Anglophone performers and aficionados in the United States. Despite generally pleasant relations between Marone musicians and international visitors, feelings of bitterness and anxiety springing from disproportionate power relations were also present. Mika Grania reflected, "That business about resenting Americans, sure, there were all kinds of reasons to resent us. Why not? We were filthy rich by their standards. We came from homes where there was running water, flushing toilets. On the other hand, by coming there and getting completely enthralled by it, we brought a kind of legitimacy to it, in a way. To have recognition from the outside is not without its merits. And the kind of people who became involved in the flamenco scene, the foreigners, were so devoted. It wasn't like they were just trying to take the music and run." While U.S. Americans had seemingly endless access to money, local musicians controlled the sonic and kinesthetic activities they sought out. Diego and others could play where and when they wanted, like they had always done. With the arrival of the tape recorder, however, U.S. American apprentices could finally play and replay the music they were so eager to learn and understand. The appearance of this recording device on the Marone scene diminished the power and threatened the musical self-determination of local musicians, however slightly, precisely because it allowed others to, quote, take the music, end quote, wherever they pleased. Evan Harar, for instance, listened to copied tapes of Diego prior to taking lessons with him in 1967. To Diego's dismay, Harar was able to imitate his melodic lines after a few short minutes of lessons. After Evan explained he had listened to another student's recordings, Diego responded by playing extremely difficult original passages, presumably to reestablish his artistic superiority and illustrate the fundamental irreproducibility of his talent. Thus, while Diego reserved certain musical material and wisdom exclusively for close friends and family, the presence of recordings forced him to confront fears about losing control of his tradition. More recently, Harar was involved in a dispute with Gastor's descendants, including nephews Juan del Gastor and Agustin Rios, for selling copies of the Fiesta tapes at $12 a disc. After some years of estrangement, Juan agreed to visit Evan at his home in order to settle their disagreements. Mika recounts the story. "We kept saying, Juan, you kind of don't understand Evan's living circumstances. You kind of don't get it. Finally, after years of this, finally Lucy gets Juan over to Evan. And of course, what does Evan do? He gives Juan endless videos, lists of recordings, copies of all these lyrics translated for free. And the timing of this is Juan's going to do a class, a seminar that's at UC Santa Cruz that happens over a three-week period. All this is material he can use. Evan's saying, whatever you want, just tell me what you could use. It's yours. Whatever you want is yours. And Juan's looking around and going, okay, this guy is living in a one-room basement apartment. So his whole deal about Evan making money off of the gypsies is rearranged." End quote. In this instance, the Fiesta tapes reveal assumptions some Andalusians have about U.S.-American wealth. Juan, like others in his family, expected Evan to have made substantial profits off of his uncle's music. On the contrary, Evan neither earns much money on the recordings nor lives comfortably. Nevertheless, the Fiesta tapes intensify these preconceptions because Evan wields with them some influence over how the Marone style is received and experienced today. When I asked Evan why many Gastor family members resented him, he responded, quote, "I think the fact is it's their music. It's his family's music, and here I am dispensing it. They've got no power over that, and I can kind of understand that. I could have gone to record companies with some of the music that I have of Diego and had things issued and tried to keep all of the money myself, which I never did. But they don't like the fact of anyone else having any power over their family's music, And I can understand that, but I've also made a lot of people very happy by giving them Diego's music," end quote. While Evan has introduced this music to numerous people around the world via internet, he has also repatriated recordings back to the younger generation of the Gestor clan in Morón. In 2000, he sent the dancer Pepe Torres and guitarist Paco de Amparo a number of Chris Carnes' personal recordings. Harar stated, "When I met Pepe Torres and Paco de Amparo at Dieguito's in 2000, they had never heard much Diego, they said. So when I came back to the States, you know, I had this huge collection. I sent them about 18 tapes, plus I sent them all of the Diego movies that I had. You know, Diego had a brother, Mellizo. His name's Francisco or something, but everybody called him Mellizo. He had died way before I got there, and he was considered to be totally nuts, but he actually played very good guitar. And Chris recorded him. I had the copy of that recording. So I sent that to Pepe and Paco. Fast forward another 5 years later, Pepe and Paco come out to San Francisco. On that original recording, Mellizo plays these really neat Sevillanas falsetas, or phrases, melodic phrases. They came here and gave a concert with Juan in San Francisco. One of the things they did was this whole Sevillanas thing, and most of it was Mellizo stuff. I had sent them the tape that they took it from," end quote. In 2003, Pepe Torres and Paco de Amparo united with Manuel Flores, Raúl Rodríguez, and Moy de Morón to form the group that became known as Son de la Frontera. Torres and de Amparo modified El Mellizo's music to fit a group setting, and they later recorded these arrangements on their second and final album, Cal. That it's not just one instrument there, it's the guitar and also the Cuban trace. So that was their contribution to this music. There's a connection that Raul in particular, who studied anthropology, that he's made between Andalusian immigrants and the sort of music of son cubano with flamenco music. Anyhow, so flamenco is an important marker of local identity in Andalusia. In Morón, Diego del Gastor's musical style remains popular and continues to represent the rich character and history of the pueblo. Many of my friends from Morón boast about their connections to Diego, including their own collections of tapes and photographs. These holdings constitute demonstrations of commitment to remembering, honoring, and identifying with the town and its musical legacy. This case study points to the capacity of schizophrenic processes to intensify and further reveal the quality of existing relationships, bringing them into full relief. The Fiesta tapes provide significant insight into this musical community because they expose an imbalance of power in pronounced ways that compel cultural actors to respond, even while creating entirely new disparities. In sum, these recordings simultaneously sustain and complicate this tradition as it moves into the future. Thank you.
Great. Excellent presentation.